All right, for this episode of Growing Up, my guest is a tremendous singer-songwriter who has a brand new album out called People Watching. And if you're into storytelling, this is the album you definitely want to pick up. Sam Fender is here with us on East Street Radio. How you doing, Sam?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for being here with us.
Thanks.
So let's start with the new album, People Watching. It kind of feels like you're become this real observer of almost like a songwriter journalist. When you were coming up with the idea for the album, was this sort of where you wanted to go?
I think usually you start the album with like a you know, you think you're going to make like a concept album, and then it just never ends up being whatever you planned. You know, it comes out completely different at the end. So I don't know, maybe I don't know. People Watching was actually like one of the last songs that I did.
Okay.
So it kind of it was like coincidence that it made sense. Do you know what I mean?
Like, right.
All of the rest of the songs, it had the title that made sense, I guess.
But, yeah. No, that's fine. Listen, you know, that every album starts from some place, you know, and you said People Watching, the title track was one of the last songs that you wrote. Where did it all begin with you? Like, again, well, let's say you came up with this idea for a concept of an album. When did that all begin for you?
I mean, I've done it every single time. When I say I came up with like a concept, I attempt to do it every album. And then, as I say, it just, that kind of goes out the window halfway through. But I think the first song was actually weirdly Rain Man. I think that was the first one. I wrote that about 4 years ago.
Right.
And then, you know, the rest ensued after that too.
Kind of just came along as they did. Well, you know, the whole feel of the album is sort of a snapshot of lives. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you wanted to do with this record? Just you wanted to tell stories about people?
Yeah. Well, it's essentially just an album about my hometown again. And the next album will also be about my hometown again. I wrote People Watching's a love. The song People Watching is about grief and about somebody very dear to me. It was about Annie Owen. She was like a surrogate mother to us, but she also she was a mentor. I used to like do acting classes in the community centre when I was a kid. She used to always say that whenever I won anything or went to go and pick up an award for anything, she would always be like, "Why haven't you mentioned me?" So it was kind of like it was me making up for not mentioning her, you know. Oh. And she passed away before the album came out, but I like to think that she knows about it wherever she is. But that was like a love letter to her, really, and a song about grief. And then there's kind of that theme kind of ties through a lot of the album, you know. It's kind of grief. It sounds like a funeral march the way I'm describing it at the moment, but it's actually very uplifting as well. I hope so.
Right. Yeah. Well, you don't shy away from any of the tough stuff on the record.
No, we don't. Not in this one.
Yeah. You even touch a little bit about your own sort of success in one of the songs. So what was it about that you felt the need to write about that topic?
Well, I think there's an element of it's really weird. Like I was quite ill when I was 20. I had a pretty bad health condition, and but then I got better, and you have this thing called survivor's guilt sometimes when you get better and you see other people. You know, I had to go to, you know, like group therapy things with people who were unwell. And, you know, I got survivor's guilt for that. And I suppose when you have a lot of success, you know, there's an element of guilt that comes with that as well sometimes. So I think that's what I was really talking about in that. But
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned your hometown. Were you writing about that on several of your albums? So give people all over here in the States, you know, a little bit about a snapshot of what your hometown is about and growing up.
North Shields. It's a small, it's a drinking town with a fishing problem. And it's a small fishing town on the coast of Newcastle. It's on the mouth of the Tyne River, mm-hmm. and I love it. I love it so much. And
are you still there?
Not all the time. I can't really. That's the thing that I'm kind of wrestling with at the moment. I'm down in London at the moment because it's quite tough for us to kind of go around Shields without getting hassled a lot. But I still have a place there, and I'm kind of, I go back probably every month. Do you know what I mean? For a week normally. So I'm between there and in London. But it's great. It's a great town. It's mental. it's had its ups and downs over the years, but it's mine, you know.
Right, right. You still have friends back there?
Oh, all my friends. All my friends. Yeah. And that's why I struggle being in London as well, you know, because I've got my whole life up there, you know. My gran's still there. I still go and see her, and it's good. It's great. But the problem is, it's like, you know, you end up in the paper for like eating a sandwich. So it's ridiculous. I went for fish and chips with my gran not long ago, and it was like, you know, the paper was like, man eats chips.
Bruce runs into that quite a bit when he goes back to his hometown of Freehold. There's a diner in Freehold, New Jersey, and every time he's there, you know, the social media pages, it's blasted everywhere. You know, Bruce returns to his roots, hometown, kind of thing. So that's very similar to what you get.
Yeah, well, what did he do? He got like a sort of, like a house just a little bit out, didn't he? Or something like that.
Yes, yeah, he's close
Maybe
by.
Maybe that's
but
what
he
I
does...
need to do.
Sam Fender joining us on Growing Up here on East Street Radio. So one of the things that I noticed off of this record, as well as on your other albums, is you're telling stories about people and characters much in the same way as Bruce Springsteen did, especially early in his career. When you first decided that you wanted to get into songwriting, did you have any ideas of, like, did you think that I want to write sort of in the vein of the way Bruce writes, or say Bob Dylan, or did it just sort of come to you naturally?
I mean Bruce was I love Bruce to bits, you know. He was a big influence. My brother first showed his Born to Run when I was like 14. But also it was like a lot of Joni Mitchell as well. I remember when I was 14, I got like Grace by Jeff Buckley. That was a really important album. Born to Run by Springsteen. And I got Blue. I got Joni Mitchell. Mm. So those were like all, they kind of all came at the same time. And I don't know, I think in the case of Bruce, what I really liked about his songs, well, first of all, like my hometown on the coast is very much like amusements, and like, so when I went to New Jersey for the first time, I was like, oh, this makes sense. I was like, this is why I resonate with these songs. I was like, because this just looks exactly like home. Do you know what I mean? But I resonated with that, and I found it inspiring that you could write such huge anthemic songs about a place like my hometown. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I suppose that was the main inspiration. However, okay. I'm becoming a little bit uncomfortable with the constant comparisons, because just like really daunting when people say, is it like Bruce? I'm like, nope. I'm not. I'm like, it's not as good as that. But
I'm sure it's nice to be mentioned in the same conversation.
Oh no, it is. It's just also a bit. Yeah. I'm also just feel like, you know, I don't feel like it's worthy of that, you know. But thank you.
So tell me about, so you're growing up, you started getting into music at a very young age, and it was started with the guitar.
Yes.
And from what I read, it was more about the guitar playing than the songwriting when you were much younger.
Oh, yeah.
You were listening to a lot of hard rock stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to be Slash from Guns N' Roses. I loved it.
Who was your favorite?
Oh, I loved him. I loved his and his daft hat. I was banging into that, and like in all of the just, you know, I loved like the Beatles and all the old rock stuff. Do you know what I mean? I did the classic entry.
Yes.
It was all Led Zeppelin and all of that and stuff like that. And Sabbath.
Awesome. Tony Iommi.
Yeah, I just loved it. At first I just wanted to be in like a 3-piece rock band, you know. So mm-hmm. I had a little band, and the songs absolutely sucked. Do you know what I mean? But there was some good riffs. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
When I was 14, that's when I started getting into like Bruce and Joni and Dylan and Neil Young and Jeff Buckley and all of that, you know. And that's when you know, I started listening to those other songs, and I was like, yeah, the riffs are great, but the lyrics didn't speak to us as much as, you know, those artists. And then that's when I started kind of going down that path.
Yeah. Right. All great lyricists.
Yeah.
Joni Mitchell, Jeff Buckley, amazing, yeah. Amazing stuff.
Brilliant.
So you've got the shredding down, and you've got the riffs, and now you decide to take on the songwriting part. How easy or difficult was that for you when you first wrote your first songs?
I mean, if you hear any of them songs from that time, I think you'll realise how hard it was. They were bloody awful. I mean, it's like anything, isn't it? You've just got to keep plugging away and hone your craft, you know. I'm still plugging away and trying to learn how to write a good song. I mean, you never stop learning, do you?
No, you definitely do not. But you've been doing quite well since your first EP came out in 2018, I believe.
It's been on us, to be honest. When you think about it, I can't quite believe it. It's this last couple of months especially has been ludicrous. The stuff that's been going on. It's been the most successful 3 months of my career, and all I've been doing is playing PlayStation and eating pizza, because I was supposed to be taking time out, and then this song's just blown up, and I'm like, it's really weird.
Sure it is on some level, because you feel like you should be out doing some kind of work.
Well, I am now.
Or whatever. Yes, I'm back. You're back.
I'm back.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, good. Good. So you started off, you again, playing music and putting a band together and songwriting and
yeah.
And your journey along the way, playing, I guess you were playing like the local clubs in the area. Was there a scene going on at that time?
There was more sort of bar playing back when I was a kid, when I was 16. It's quite sad because the pub trade is, you know, it's a shadow of its former self. Like, it used to be, you know, my hometown had like gigs on every night, most nights, you know. I mean, there's still bars and still pubs playing, but it's just not the same as it used to be. You know, there's no pay in it, really. It's kind of like quite hard for anybody to make a living from it now. But when I was, when I was 15, it was better. There was this great pub called the Maggie Bank, which I loved. You know, it was, I don't know if you've ever heard of a band called Lindisfarne, but they were like a folk, great folk band, and the songwriter was a guy called Alan Hull, who's another one of my like big heroes, you know. I really look up to him. Alan Hull was, in my opinion, like as prolific a songwriter as Bob Dylan, but just nowhere near as, you know, heralded or recognised. But you should go listen to Alan Hull's stuff. He's amazing. And he lived in my hometown, and he used to drink in this bar called the Maggie Bank, and my dad used to drink there, who coincidentally, my dad's also called Alan. I think everybody in that town's called Alan. I used to play there. My brother used to run like an open mic night in that pub, you know. And so many so many musicians I've seen through the years, like in my dad's band, because my dad was a social club player as well, you know, back in the 70s. So, you know, I've got really fond memories of that place being kind of the bedrock and sort of start of my musical sort of journey in life, you know.
Right.
It's a great place.
Is it still there?
It is, but it has been closed for a long time. I believe somebody's buying it and might be opening it. I don't know what the score is, but it used to be great. It was a good place to go when you'd and I could also sneak upstairs when I was like 14 and steal drink, and until I got caught by Andrea, the landlady, who's a lovely Irish woman, and she just went, "I'm just disappointed in you." And I was so upset. I felt like I'd really let her down. I thought she was going to give us a slap, but she didn't. She went for the disappointed face, and that was even worse. Do you know what I mean? But,
not the physical pain, but the emotional.
Oh, it was
made you feel bad about yourself.
I let her down. That was the worst thing. It was great. It's a great time.
Yeah, it's sad because that's happening here in the States as well. You know, New York City. I mean, New York City still is a place where you can go out and play, and there are bars that have music, but it's not as much as what it used to be. It's definitely changed quite a bit. I don't think you could really make a living doing it.
Yeah.
Playing original music. I think you could do it as a cover band.
Yeah.
Doing that, but not going
out. Oh, no, definitely not original music.
No. Yeah.
I mean, we didn't make... I was so lucky to have a manager that was, like, willing to bankroll and bet. He bet on me. And but if I didn't have that, like, I don't know how I would have done it, you know? I was just lucky that he found me in a bar and decided that he was like, you know... He nearly lost his house. That's how much it takes, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which, you know, kind of has created this vacuum now, and the whole sort of industry. I mean, it's always been a middle class game. You know, it's never really been an easy route for working class kids to get involved in it. Mm-hmm. But even more so now, I think it's even worse because, you know, there isn't that. You can't really get that income stream from gigging early on, so. You know.
No.
So I don't know what we're gonna do about it, but something needs to be done. Because
there's social media.
We need better benefits. That's what it is. We need better.
Okay.
We need better benefits, right? Back in the 80s, you could sit on your ass and get, you know, however much money a day from, you know, the government, but Thatcher came along and destroyed it, right? And this is why we don't have the Smiths anymore. This is why we don't have, you know, there's no Oasis is coming through because there's no good benefits, and I'm bloody sick of it. Bring back the benefits.
All right. I like it. I'm with you, Sam Fender. Absolutely. So Born to Run was the first Bruce album you got, and right away, was it the title track that grabbed you?
Yeah, it was the first thing I ever heard. My brother put on Born to Run on it. I told Bruce this when I met him. It was my brother's van, and it was a terrible, like, tinny speaker, and there was, you know, like cigarette tobacco packets all over the floor, and we were driving to Manchester, and he went, "Have you ever heard Bruce before?" And I went, no. He goes, "Oh, listen to this," and it was like straight into Born to Run, and I remember being like, "Whoa!" Then he had it really loud as well, and I told Bruce this, and he's like "We actually mastered the record to make it sound good in cars." apparently they had it, the master tape or whatever, hooked up to the speaker of a car because he wanted to make sure that Born to Run sounded great in a car. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, it was. That was my first time hearing it, so.
Yeah, it was mad. Perfect. He did his job. They all did their job on that one. So when did you meet Bruce?
Met him. We opened up for Bruce in Italy, and we did two shows with him. I did one with him in Rome and one in Ferrara, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it was mental. It was really, really good. I actually blew my voice out because I was so nervous and trying to impress the boss. I remember the first gig I was playing, and I looked to the left, and I was like, oh no. I was like, that's Sting. I was like, Sting's over there watching. And then I was like, okay, just stay calm. And then I turned over and went, oh no, Sting and Bruce Springsteen are watching. And I just started over singing so hard. I came up, I was like, because I was so scared. But no, it was great. And he was, you know what it is, he was, people say don't meet your heroes. With Bruce, you couldn't be further from the truth. He was a gentleman, and you know, he sat and we had a chat for ages after before the Rome show. Mm-hmm. And he gave us all the time in the world, you know, and was really, really, you know, supportive. And little Stephen is great. I love Stevie Van Zandt as well. He's just such a legend. He is the guy. He was the first person from the band to come out and see me, you know. He came and saw me like when we played in the Bowery Ballroom years ago. And I remember, you know, freaking out then. I couldn't believe it. Also, I'm a big Sopranos fan. So I was just like, oh my God, Sil. I can't believe it. Sil's here. So yeah, it was great. They're absolute gents, you know.
Yeah, they are. And Bruce is always, in my time with him, he's always been very generous with his time. And I'm sure with you as well, being, you know, up and coming songwriter and singer at the time and opening up for him and the E Street Band. And Stevie's always got his ear out there. He's always listening for music and new sounds. So it doesn't surprise me that he went and caught your show years back.
Yeah, Stevie's great. Also, I'm just going to put this out there. I've lost Stevie Van Zandt's number. So if anybody wants to let Stevie know.
All right, we'll let him know.
I would love to get back in touch.
We'll definitely let him know, Sam. Do you have... I know you cover Dancing in the Dark.
I did, yes.
Tell me a little bit about why that one.
Because Brooke in my band, Brooke Bentham, who's also an incredible singer-songwriter in her own right... the first time I ever met Brooke, I was 17, she was 16, and I walked into an open mic night, and I heard her sing that song, and the way she sang that song was like, I was like, oh my God, that's how you should sing. I kind of learned how to sing from Brooke in my band. And just the way she sang that, it stayed with us, and so I did what all good friends do, and I copied her. And took the credit. But I love that song. I've covered a couple over the years. Like I did Reasons to Believe once and butchered the last verse on a live stream, so that was good. And we've done a few others. I think we did Born in the USA once, much to the disdain of the American public. But yeah, it was good.
That's interesting.
I think my favourite album's Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah, I think it's my favourite one. I just look like every single song. It's a no skip album for me.
Yeah.
I love Racing in the Street. That's a great
song. Beautiful. It's a beautiful song.
Probably one of my favourite songs of all time.
That Darkness was the first song I ever heard.
Was it?
Darkness is a
tune as well, man.
Yeah, and he names Fairview, which is a town in New Jersey, which I grew up right next to. And I knew nothing about Bruce at the time, so I was like, wow, like this guy knows where I live, sort of.
Wow, yeah, mad.
But yeah, Darkness is incredible.
It's a great, great record. All of them, Nebraska. I'm banging a Tunnel of Love at the moment, actually.
You know, that's one of those albums that...
creeped up on
us. You know, because there's so many... Yes, exactly. Yeah. And you don't think about it when you think of all of Bruce Springsteen's music, and then you put that album on and you go, man.
It's a beast. It's absolutely
beast. Really is. It really is.
I'm just going to go make an album.
Okay.
Sorry, I've got a terrible cold at the moment. I'm going to go make an album and going to come back. I think we're going to probably start in America because it's like... This is the first time we ever got on the Billboard, so it's working. Let's go.
All right.
So we're gonna come back. I think in probably February, March ish time.
Great.
Maybe early spring. Next year. All right, but I'm gonna make another album before that. So.
And then hit the road.
And then come straight here. I think that's the plan.
Great.
Because the last tour was great. I loved it. I had the most fun ever, you know.
Good. I'm glad. And congratulations on your success and congratulations on people watching. It's a fantastic album.
Thank you, man.
And we're going to be playing a whole bunch of the songs from the album during this episode when it airs so that Bruce Springsteen fans can, who don't know you, get to know you and get to know your music, and they're going to become Sam Fender fans.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
All right, Sam. Thanks for joining us on East Street Radio. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Thank you.